You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special Monday Night Football preview edition of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we're getting ready for the Seahawks and the New Orleans Saints in a highly anticipated Monday Night Football showdown between the two best teams in the NFC thus far.
I'm really excited.
Me too.
Can't wait.
Controversial positions.
So we've been here all day. We're recording this on a Sunday night after watching all the NFL games for the day. And wanted to start out with kind of what's at stake right now.
Well, it's a big one. So if the Seahawks win, they clinch a playoff spot. And their magic number for the number one seed in the NFC and a home field advantage throughout the playoffs is 2 wins, which is pretty good with 4 games to go, 2 of them at home. Now, if they lose, the picture no longer is good. The Saints and the Seahawks would be tied in the NFC standings, and the Saints obviously would have the tiebreaker and therefore control their own destiny. Now, they do have a fairly difficult schedule, 2 games left with the Panthers, including Sunday night next week, but Seahawks also would still have a magic number of 3 just to clinch the division, which all of a sudden would become a little bit of an issue going to San Francisco next week.
Yeah, so if they lose, it makes that San Francisco game much bigger.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, one of the best things about if the Seahawks can win tomorrow is, you know, being able to lose that San Francisco game and have it not hurt them really at all in many ways.
But you would say, I mean, obviously there's a lot on the line for both teams, maybe a little bit more on the line for New Orleans, considering that they have to play Carolina twice.
So that would put them a tie in the division with Carolina. They would have to at least split those 2 games to end up winning the division. And if it goes beyond that, I don't know. The tiebreakers are beyond me.
It ends up being very complicated.
There was a scenario at one point where if the Seahawks and Niners both won out, that the Niners would have the tiebreaker because of the head-to-head common opponents who they defeated. And it turns out that things like that rarely end up mattering. But in New Orleans-Carolina case, it's actually a pretty good chance.
And then also, this is just a big game, basically. I mean, we talked about this before, the San Francisco game to begin the year, but this is the game that has the town most excited, especially since San Francisco, but probably since last playoffs.
Well, I think really people have just been anticipating this game for several weeks. Like, you looked at the schedule, and after you got through probably the game at Indianapolis, once Atlanta kind of fell apart, this was the game on the schedule that everyone was pointing to. It was kind of like killing time in a lot of ways to get to this matchup in the next week against San Francisco.
Yeah, we had this game marked on the calendar for a very long time. And it's also the next Monday Night Football game that the Seahawks have hosted since the Fail Mary play against Green Bay last year, which I have to say, probably for me, was one of my best Seahawks game attending memories of all time, was being at that game.
Well, where does the Beastquake, the last time we faced the Saints, rank in that scale?
That's a weird question, right? So, 2010 playoffs, Seahawks are going in 7-9, facing the former Super Bowl champion Saints, right?
Defending Super Bowl champion Saints, and not just 7-9, but laughing stock, people saying we should change the rules to prevent a below 500 division champion.
All the things that I'm saying this year about the AFC wildcard. But it was weird. So watching the Beastquake leading up to that game, I actually felt fairly confident about winning. We just come off a victory over St. Louis at home to win the division, and I felt pretty good about winning in a strange way. But when Marshawn broke that run, it's kind of hard to tell. And when you're at home, you don't necessarily realize this. But just seeing what's going on, especially in running plays when there's a lot of traffic, is really hard when you're at the stadium, especially when you're pretty high up at the 300 level. So I didn't really know. I knew that he'd broken a long run, and I could hear that people kept cheering. And also, you start celebrating, too. So we were celebrating before he made it into the end zone, and then all of a sudden, I was like, oh my god, Marshawn scored there. How did that happen? I didn't really know that it was the Beastquake until I'd gotten home later that night.
That's interesting. So my scenario was, I was at the UW basketball game that day when we had season tickets, and obviously you weren't in attendance. And there were a bunch of people watching the game on their phones in the arena, and all of a sudden you just hear like people erupting in various different locations throughout the arena, and all at slightly different times because it depended how much your connection was behind the actual play. But eventually everyone figured out that something amazing had happened. And it was a pretty cool communal experience to be at this totally other game and celebrating what was happening.
That's pretty cool.
Seahawks.
The most amazing play in Seahawks history. Individual play.
And I guess so. And it, certainly in terms of like just skill and impressive performance. I mean, I think like, you know, the Fail Mary is up there in terms of like just excitement and craziness and
craziness.
Jubilation. But yeah, in terms of just like that was actually an incredible thing that an athlete did. It's hard to top that.
So let's move to the current teams, a better Seahawks team and probably a better Saints team also, two of the best teams in the league. And let's talk about what we expect to happen in this upcoming matchup.
Well, to me, one of the interesting things about this game is that, you know, you mentioned an improved Saints team, and that is actually true. They were ninth by DVOA in 2010 when they were lost in Seattle, and they were only sixth in DVOA in the regular season the year they actually won the Super Bowl. And this year's team is, you know, right up there, number three in the league, I think, behind Denver and Seattle. So that's, or number four, because Carolina's ahead of them too, right?
Statistically, this is the best Saints team that they've had of the current Drew Brees, Sean Payton run.
Exactly. So that's kind of interesting and really a testament to what they've done at the defensive end this year after bringing in Rob Ryan to overhaul that system.
Yeah, just looking 5 years back in DVOA, so currently they rank 12th defensively in DVOA, and in the last 5 years they've been ranked 26th, 17th, 10th, 28th, and then 32nd last in the league last year. And this year they're up to 12th.
Yeah, you know, if you've got Drew Brees, if you've got the New Orleans offensive attack, you don't need a dominant defense. You don't need a Seahawks defense. But you need a competent group that can at least stop teams. And they've been more than that, I think, so far this season. It's really a testament to what Ryan has done and then some of the new talent they've added, like Kenny Vaccaro.
Yeah, Kenny Vaccaro, I think, is one of the biggest difference makers. Dave the Heater Hawthorne. Hawthorne being there is always excited for us. But they're 5th against the pass and then 30th against the run. So that's one thing that I think, you know, we should be looking for. They're 12th overall, but really not particularly great against the run. It ends up kind of weird statistically because teams don't tend to run for a lot of yards against them, usually because the Saints are scoring so many points that teams aren't running. But they haven't defended it particularly well, and I think that that's one place that the Seahawks are going to be able to exploit going forward.
Yeah, I think that's certainly what the game plan is going to be coming out there. I mean, that's what it almost always is under Pete Carroll, first off, with Marshawn Lynch. But in this particular scenario, I mean, you've got the positives of not only potentially having a big day for Marshawn Lynch, but also keeping Drew Brees off the field as much as possible. And I think because of both of that, they're going to come out looking to run the football.
And control the game. And you were mentioning how the Saints are when they blitz, go with the big blitz.
Yeah, that's Ryan's MO. He really loves to bring the blitz. You don't know where it's going to come from. They love a lot of secondary blitzes, which is one thing that Vaccaro, I think, has helped them with quite a lot and changing up the personnel. And it's been very effective. They're number one in the NFL in adjusted sack rate, and that's going to be a huge key. That against the Seahawks offensive line that is number 31 out of 32 in adjusted sack rate on offense, but with the major caveat that that's not with Russell Okung and Bruno Giacomini on the ends. It's been with a backup offensive line, and now you've got the starters together for the last couple of weeks dating back to the Minnesota game.
You'd like to hope that they're 31 because of having backup offensive linemen there.
Well, I mean, the protection was really good in the Minnesota game. Now, obviously not the same kind of defensive line, even with Jared Allen, and not the same kind of blitz, exotic blitzes that they're going to see tomorrow night, but it was a positive sign. And then the other thing is Russell Wilson's ability. The guys are going to come free at times, and Russell's got to be able to make plays with his feet.
And escape them. Yeah, I think it's something that's interesting, having that two-week period off. Obviously, the Seahawks are going to know how New Orleans blitzes, right? And so looking at ways to do kind of good running plays against all-out blitzes and figuring out maybe screen passes and getting the ball over the top and exploiting some of that all-out blitz for big plays for Marshawn on the ground.
But it's a weird game in that both teams are so coming in with so much time to prepare. The Saints having played on Thursday Night Football the week before, it's kind of the same thing as where the Seahawks had that long stretch. It was almost like a mini-bye between playing on Thursday Night Football and then again on Monday Night Football. So both teams should know what they're doing.
And then the Saints, defensively, they also defend receivers really well. Their secondary has been really good, obviously. Vaccaro's a big part of that. And then Keenan Lewis coming over. I think he came over from Pittsburgh and has been really good lately, too.
And the Seahawks receiving core will be down a little bit from what we were hoping. It doesn't sound like Percy Harvin's going to play. He's doubtful after experiencing some soreness in that surgically repaired hip and missing the last couple of days of practice. So that puts the Seahawks back where they were, you know, the couple weeks before that, where you've got Golden Tate, you've got Doug Baldwin, you've got Jermaine Kearse, And you're going to really rely on that group of trio of players, I think.
And they're used to doing it. Obviously, the Seahawks have had the whole season relying on those players. But an interesting thing looking at the Saints is that they don't show, against the pass especially, one true weakness. It wasn't like they're poor against tight ends or they're poor against running backs coming out of the backfield. They're basically pretty stout against every single receiver and also tight ends and running backs.
I mean, I guess the question is, with that kind of a balanced scheme, how much do you miss Percy Harvin as a potential wild card, assuming he doesn't play?
I mean, I think it's huge. But the Seahawks haven't had him in practice. It's not like they're just losing him. It's not like they're game planning for him for these 2 weeks. I would assume that Pete Carroll knew that they were not going to have him, or at least it was highly, highly questionable over those 2 weeks whether they would have him. So I think they've been game planning, knowing what they're going into, and I really think it's going to be run, run, run.
It's just unfortunate because it seems like everything you were doing with Harvin was kind of pointing towards this game. Same thing with the offensive line. Get them back before the bye, have them ready to go, then a solid week of practice coming off the bye, and you're right in the mix. And unfortunately, that timing hasn't worked out with Harvin.
It's true. This game, and then also San Francisco the next week, we were watching the Vikings earlier, and Xavier Rhodes, who's having a really good rookie season at cornerback, and I was saying that it would be really nice, considering the suspensions, to Browner and Thurman to have Xavier Rhodes right now filling in, having a young, fresh corner, which is who Minnesota drafted with the pick that we gave them for Percy Harvin.
Well, let's talk about that matchup then, because that's going to be one that we're going to talk about a lot. You've got the Seahawks secondary depleted, let's say, without Brendan Browner and Walter Thurman. You're going to see guys like Byron Maxwell moving into the starting lineup, presumably, and Jeremy Lane playing a lot in the nickel. And then behind them, who knows as far as Deshaun Jett and who might get action if the Seahawks have to go to a dime package, but that against a terrific group of wide receivers.
Yeah, there's been big turnover in the Seahawks secondary lately, and not really sure, but I do have a lot of faith in Jeremy Lane and Byron Maxwell. You know, they're not coming into this game inexperienced. They both played a lot when Browner was suspended at the end of last season.
And Thurman was still injured at that point.
And they also played earlier this season when Browner was out, and have just played a lot, honestly. I mean, the Seahawks rely on those players quite a bit, and they both played really well. You know, I think especially Jeremy Lane is somebody who's really impressed me. And also, I mean, I think it was Maxwell who subbed in when Browner was benched for a couple of series against Tampa Bay, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a lot of experience getting in the game. It's not like they're coming in fresh, and I have a lot of faith against them. But there are so many different places that the Saints can attack you, right?
Yeah, I mean, they have three wide receivers with DVOAs over 25%. Obviously, Colston, their top option there, but also Kenny Stills, the deep threat, and Robert Meacham, another deep threat, all over that mark. And I haven't even brought up Jimmy Graham, who's probably the single most dangerous weapon in the NFL. I think you could argue in the passing game, and Calvin Johnson will probably take umbrage with that, but, you know, Jimmy Graham is such a matchup nightmare. He's up there.
Yeah, I think that having somebody like Cam Chancellor at kind of a strong safety position is really nice for defending Jimmy Graham, because he's big and he's physical, and it seemed that Jimmy Graham lately, especially this season when players have played physical against him, has not done particularly great. Obviously, everybody points to Aqib Talib with the Patriots coming in there and really shutting down Jimmy Graham. He held him to zero catches.
I'm pretty sure that's as good as you can do.
he had a nice game against Jeremy Graham. And I think that Cam Chancellor, he doesn't have the shiftiness and the speed that Aqib Talib has, but he can hang with Jimmy Graham, and he can play him really physical. Honestly, the place that really scares me is somebody like Kenny Stills breaking free, where the Seahawks have not defended these outside wide receivers all that well, thinking back to Minnesota and somebody like Jarius Wright.
Yeah, this is what we've seen the last couple of weeks, where they've been vulnerable. Sherman seemed to be a little banged up in that Minnesota game. The couple weeks of rest should help him. Do you see a scenario where he ends up on Jimmy Graham at all?
On Jimmy Graham? Probably not. I would see Sherman. I mean, I think that for Jimmy Graham, I would expect KJ Wright and some of the outside linebackers. I would expect, obviously, Cam Chancellor. And I would expect a little bit of picking him at the line, too. Maybe a linebacker dumps him off, but gives him a little poke on his way. I would be surprised to see Richard Sherman matching up with Jimmy Graham, though.
And then the other factor we haven't mentioned in the passing game at all is Darren Sproles.
The Seahawks have actually done really well against running backs coming out of the backfield. It's a thing that they've really excelled at this season defensively. And looking at it, they're especially good defending, like I said, tight ends, running backs, and secondary receivers. It's one thing where they haven't, like I said, they haven't done a great job against these top receivers, and they've given up a bit of ground there, but they've really shut down running backs coming out of the backfield.
Which is interesting because it's kind of a shift from what we saw in the middle of the season, where Houston and Indianapolis, and to a lesser extent Tampa Bay, all managed to take advantage of that Seahawks linebacking core and kind of that intermediate range. So it'll be interesting to see if that success holds up or whether, you know, this sheer quality of the Saints' options and depth of them starts to cause some problems with that Seahawks linebacking group.
You know, the linebacking core has done much better since then, and I think part of that was these secondary receivers. I mean, the Saints, that would be somebody like Ben Watson, really. Just popping out open and picking up 8-10 yards in the intermediate range. But I think since then, and also stopping the run in that time period too, it was pretty rough for that linebacking core. But since then, they've been really, really stout there. They haven't given up a lot on the ground, and they haven't given up a lot in the intermediate range. Against Minnesota, pretty much all we saw was the deep ball.
Yeah, and you know, I think what we've seen from the Saints is they're just so good that you're not going to be able to stop everything. I mean, no matter how good the Seahawks are defensively, no matter how good the game plan is. So what do you think is the one thing you can least afford to give up?
The one thing you can least afford to give up? I really think it's the deep ball to Kenny Stills or somebody like that, Robert Meacham. I think that if they give up a 60, 70-yard touchdown pass that's a quick hit, I think it could be kind of devastating, and it could get the crowd out of the game pretty quickly.
Yeah, I can see that, and I think the Saints will look to try to hit that kind of play if it's there. The other factor that will come into play is how much time Drew Brees gets to throw. You know, he's very good against the blitz, one of the quickest releases in the league, and they're in the top 10 in adjusted sack rate offensively. So you've got strength going up against a bit of a strength in the Seahawks defensive line and their ability to get to the passer.
And so where do the Seahawks rank in that?
7th.
And where does Drew Brees rank?
6th.
Okay. So there's not much to exploit there. I mean, obviously, Drew Brees gets the ball out quickly, and he's got a lot of options, and he has a security blanket in somebody like Darren Sproles, who he can get the ball to very quickly.
One of the interesting things, I think, to switch gears a little bit of the cornerback depth is if Jeremy Lane's moving into your rotation as the nickelback, it makes it a little more difficult to use him as much as the Seahawks like to do on special teams. And that's a case where I think you may see a bit of a cascade combined with Percy Harvin not being available potentially in that role. So fortunately, Jermaine Kearse is healthy after the concussion he suffered against the Vikings. He'll be in the return role, but it'll be interesting to see whether Jeremy Lane's still the gunner, how involved he is if he's playing more at corner. He could play all the snaps.
Honestly, I'd be curious about that also. Special teams has been one place where the Seahawks have gained an advantage over almost everybody, and when you look at the Saints, they have a clear advantage over New Orleans there.
Yeah, New Orleans is number 21 in the league in special teams. One of the rare elite teams this year that's not been very good on special teams. That's been something that's defined teams like the Seahawks, and you know the Broncos have struggled a little bit lately, and also the Chiefs.
You know, I can't think of any specific special teams blunders that the Saints have had this season, but I think in general they're just kind of giving up. They're giving up yards, where the Seahawks give up nothing on punt returns. They cover kick returns really well, and the Saints are just giving up a little bit more than them every time.
A punt return would be their biggest weakness. They're somewhere in the bottom 5 in the league, I think, in punt returns, whereas you've got the Seahawks who are number 1 in that category and have allowed, I think, like 6 return yards since week 1, since the first punt of the season.
Well, that's also an interesting thing to look at with Golden Tate, who's such a shifty punt returner, too, where I could see him breaking free.
And in a game that against teams that are this relatively evenly matched, I think you could see special teams be a difference maker.
Anything else?
Well, I think let's get to our predictions for chances of winning.
65% Seahawks chances of victory.
Yeah, that's about where I settled too, which is I think that the Seahawks are a marginally better team if you're playing on a neutral field, and then you throw in home field advantage, and I think that tips the scale slightly in their favor. Is there any concern about Drew Brees playing outdoors?
You know, not really. I know that's kind of the dialogue about Drew Brees, but I think that statistically it bears out that he's just playing. Most of his road games are outdoors, and all his home games are indoors. So obviously his record is going to be much better because he's playing at home, and I don't know if the indoor-outdoor thing is a big factor there.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think it's more of a talking point, whereas it's a confirmation bias, because if he struggles outdoors, then you bring it up. And if he plays well, then
exactly.
You just kind of sweep it under the rug.
I mean, it's the same thing that happens with Peyton Manning all the time. People say that Peyton Manning can't play in cold weather. Obviously, he's played pretty well in Denver lately.
And, of course, you know, Drew Brees playing like a little bit worse than usual is still better than almost all the quarterbacks in the league. So that's kind of the nature of it.
And I think they were playing pretty murky weather against New England in October 13th in Week 6. And I think Drew Brees had a great game there. Actually, he had an okay game, a little bit worse than I remember that being. But the game plan for their other loss against the New York Jets was the really thing that got them, was the Jets just pounded the ball and pounded the ball and pounded the ball and gained yards on the ground and kept the ball out of Drew Brees' hands.
Really an outcome that grows more mystifying by the week with each terrible performance by Geno Smith and the Jets' offense. But given that it's currently the difference between these two teams and standings, I'll take it.
It's true. I mean, basically, I'm happy that we're not playing in New Orleans. I'm happy that we're playing Drew Brees here, but I don't think he's going to shrivel up and die in the weather.
Any thoughts on tailgating tomorrow?
You know, it's a weird tailgate because it's a Monday, and parking is taken up, so we park on 3rd Avenue. Parking is taken up by people who are actually working at jobs. It was a thing.
Priorities, people.
It kind of shocked us for that Packers Monday Night Football game. We went down there, you know, like 10 hours early expecting to get all this parking. But it turned out that there were people parking there, and they're commuters, and they're going home before the game starts. So I think we're hoping to get a ride down there with you.
Yep.
And we'll figure something out. We might even have to go to a bar in the area or just grab some chairs and pull up a spot there on 3rd Avenue and not have a car, because it's pretty much impossible to park down there.
Well, yeah, I think we'll hope to find something, but...
But it'll be cool outside. We're going to be dressed warm. We're going to have some winter warmer type beers.
It's going to feel like football.
It's going to feel like football. Mondays always feel a little bit weird. It's a weird day for a football game. Sunday night is when it really feels like football.
I know. I thought there was a lot of energy in the air for that Packers game when I was just down there hanging out with you guys beforehand.
And once you get closer to the game there, when you're down there at 11 o'clock, there's
well, enough. That may be the issue, yeah.
There are people working jobs. Concerned that there are people drinking where they're parking.
Well, consider that there are more people than usual drinking.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But, you know, it should be a great game, so I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm excited.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.